You're listening to the Life in Deep Ellum podcast, exploring the sacred in art, faith, and community. Thanks for being here.
Hey, friends. So it is November 3rd. Today is quote unquote election day. And man, I can remember turning 18 and that idea like, oh, I get to vote now, right? Feeling that I get to be engaged in this process that all the adults get to do, and I matter. There's something almost intoxicating about the power of voting. And then you do it a couple times, right? Every 4 years or every 2 years. And over time, a disillusionment sort of sets in, right? Like, what's the point of this? You begin to see how much your vote doesn't seem to matter, right? I'm just one vote. I'm a particle floating in the Atlantic Ocean. You see the tens and hundreds of thousands of votes, and you realize that your one vote didn't make that much of a difference, did it? Now, guys, I have a tendency to kind of zoom out on things, right? I see everything through the lens of history and culture. Like, I really take to heart the teachings of Thomas Merton when he talks about the news and how he, even back in the 60s, would say he didn't engage in the stimulant of news, which came to him as newspapers. So he didn't read those. He would digest his news and, you know, later down the line in periodicals, whatever, and he would say it would get to him in the form of tasteless crusts, right? So it doesn't have like the caffeine or the nicotine that news tends to have for people who watch it and read it every day. So I have to be careful, though, because, like, in zooming out, it can tempt me to not stay engaged with the present, right? That's something I'm aware of. I have to be careful of that. But I do think that it's important to have the ability to zoom out. French novelist Marcel Proust, he says it this way: the journey of true discovery lies not in finding new lands, but in looking through new eyes. Like, I think about that in terms of, like, looking at this voting process and the politics of our country. I hear a lot of people just trying to talk about getting us to a new location, right? A new set of policies or the platforms of my particular party, right? But maybe it's not about trying to get to a new land. Maybe it's about finding out a way for me to have new eyes. So allow me to offer you some new eyes. I've been reading a book by John O'Donohue called Anamkara, which is Gaelic for soul friend. And in this chapter, he's talking about the wisdom of the earth, right? And it's really interesting. He talks about, like, the animal kingdom. And he says the animals are more ancient than us, right? Evolutionarily speaking, right? He speaks of animals in terms of the knowing of the earth is in them. Animals know nothing of Freud or Jesus, Buddha, Wall Street, the Pentagon, or the Vatican. They live outside the politics of human intentions. Somehow, they already inhabit the eternal. I love that. Like, animals have a wisdom about the ages that we humans sometimes miss, because we're so wrapped up in, like, worrying about the intricacies of our political climate. So, I mean, like, look at your pets, guys. Look at your dogs, your cats, your whatever. Like, what do they care about the election? Or what about, like, the wild birds, the wild animals, the squirrels and the raccoons? What do they know about the political landscape? What outcomes do they desire or fear? You know, some will push back and say, well, animals don't care because they don't know how complicated the process is or how these policies impact big groups of people. Sure, yes, there is ignorance in those animals. I'll concede to that. But there's also knowledge. Like, they know something. I think about the time I visited the Sequoia National Forest. And I sat, I got there early one morning, I was by myself, and I sat down at the base of General Sherman, the largest tree in the forest and the largest tree on the planet, over 3,000 years old. guys. And I sat there journaling. I just did a couple sketches of the tree. And then I began to journal, like, what if I was the tree? What have I seen over the course of my life? What has this tree seen in the comings and goings of all of these human institutions, groups, tribes, politics, presidents? I think about that. There is a wisdom in that. There is a knowledge. And then I think about how we have this pandemic going on as well, on top of this election cycle. And it makes me think about something I read recently from Father Richard Rohr. He gave out a little meditation of sorts that might be titled, What the Pandemic is Saying to the World. And I thought I'd read that for you. This is what the pandemic might be saying to the world. Humanity, you are all one. You are one beloved community, and you are one global sickness. You are all contagious, and always have been, unconsciously infecting, and yet able to also bless one another. There is no higher and lower in this world. There is no smart or stupid, no totally right or totally wrong. The only meaningful division is between those who serve and those who allow themselves to be served. All the rest is temporary posturing. Many to whom you look for power and leadership have shown themselves to have empty hands, minds, and hearts. We are bereft of all satisfying explanations, all ledgers of deserving and undeserving. There are no perfect answers or absolute heroes. We must all wear a mask to protect the other from me. Don't play the victim. Victimhood is always a waste of time, God's time and yours. Instead, try to learn the important lessons. We are all in the same elementary school now. Here, we must learn to stand in two different places and to change places often. The served must also be the servants, and the servants must also be the served. Just stay in the eternal circle of the suffering and the servants. Christians call it the body of Christ. We are not the first or the last generation that gets to suffer and to serve on this earth. That's the meditation. A call to see the bigger picture, to zoom out. You know, friends, the answers that we all intuitively know need to come aren't in candidates or policies. You know, those things shift and change as sure as the weather. The answers will come out of us. They will be born and cultivated inside of us like seeds in a garden. As long as we stay the same, we will continue to elect and support the same status quo politicians and policies. But if I change, if I transform, if I grow, and if we do that together, the hope for larger change is possible. There's a very famous poet, Islamic theologian and scholar, Rumi, and I love his line that he wrote once. He said, "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in the grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense." Let me be clear. I did early voting, guys. I went and voted, and I'm engaged. Today, later in the evening, I'll be volunteering at a polling location, helping give out stickers and encouraging other people. You know, I want to encourage people to vote. Yes, it's but a particle floating in the ocean, every vote that we cast. But that's where the joy is. Acknowledging that I am one thread in the fabric of existence. I matter, I contribute, I am engaged. But when I zoom out, I can see why it matters. It's not about controlling outcomes. It's about being a part of the process and trusting that God designed the process. As Marcel Proust said, the journey of true discovery lies not in finding new lands, but in looking through new eyes. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, says Rumi, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Love you guys. Blessings.